legacy gifts are actually not about death, they're about life. And they're about the person's life. And when a donor has taken the step to remember you in their will, they care about you so much that you're part of their life story. You're part of the story, you're part of what they want to be remembered for being on this planet for. So as an organization, you have this beautiful privilege of helping this person tell part of the story of their life through you.
Do you ever consider interviewing dead people? Like, if you got Whoopi Goldberg and you know she was able to communicate with Patrick Swayze, would you be into that kind of interview?
That's a great new idea, and I would definitely encourage you to explore that, Simon.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Happy Valentine's Day. I hope you're all having a lovely Valentine's Day and getting as many lovely messages as I am. But on Valentine's Day, what we all need is a little love. And so my guest on this podcast today is the one and only Jen Love. Hello, Jen. How are you?
Hello, Simon. I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Jen, you're a longtime friend of the podcast. And I think, you know, anyone who listens to this already knows you. But just in case we have some new listeners, Jen, who are you?
Who am I? Well, I am a longtime friend of the podcast. In fact, I think I was I was guest number one or very early.
Yeah, I think on the podcast reboot, you are guest number one.
Nice.
There you go. One love.
So I am Jen Love, and I'm a partner at Agents of Good, together with John Lepp here in Canada, and we work with small and medium-sized organizations all over this big, beautiful planet to help them tell better stories, raise more money, show more love, and be more connected to their donors and supporters.
Excellent. And you are many things to many people. A lot of people know you as a storyteller. You're a beautiful writer. You're the writer of the generation of a generation. You are, you know, a great speaker, great tweeter, great everything, you know, a strong feminist, very vocal, all of these things. But that's not why I got you on today. I got you on today to talk about a little thing. I suppose the word for it is interviewing. And what I wanted to talk to Jen today about is this idea of talking to people in our organization and around our organization to gather these stories. One of the things I talk about a lot in my training and with clients is, are those stories that we share to promote our organization, to convey what the organization is doing, to raise more money? And I said it in a training session the other day. I was talking about, you know, obviously we have to spend time to interview beneficiaries to create these stories. And they didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. They were like, what do you mean by interviewing? What is this? Why are we talking to our beneficiaries? And so today, I thought it would be good to spend a bit of time talking to Jen, who is, for me, she's probably the woman who taught me everything about this and really, you know, one of the world's experts on interviewing people to create these stories. Is that a fair thing to say, Jen, that you're the best in the world?
Well, that's quite a lob. I'm very proud of the work that we do around interviews. And I feel the same, Simon, whenever I am doing training or working with clients or making presentations. People are always surprised at how much I talk about going into quite significant detail about the conversations that you have with beneficiaries and donors and program staff as a way to craft stories for fundraising. I think we've all been in the position working at a charity where you kind of ask the program team for like, oh, we need a blurb for the spring appeal. We need an update for the spring appeal. And they send you some kind of totally soulless paragraph about this person who has helped. And because our hospital's amazing, they're now cancer free. And it just has no depth. It has no context. It has nothing relatable. It has nothing, there's no meat to it. So when you actually make the decision to pick up the phone and contact beneficiaries, program staff, actual people doing the work of your charity in the field, whatever it is, and you ask the right questions, they tell you beautiful, remarkable things that makes your fundraising incredibly easy. Because then your job is just to showcase this thoughtful, conversational, honest, open, emotional piece that shows donors how they can make more of this stuff happen.
You do a lot of this. I mean, we presented together recently in Vegas, and I think your next step on that journey was you were actually going somewhere to spend a full day or even more just interviewing people. So a huge chunk of your working life, even though you're a full-time fundraiser, is simply having these conversations with people who you're not looking for money from. But
Absolutely, yes.
that's fun. That's part of fundraising, right? Like that's a
It
big chunk of
sure
fundraising.
is. Well, for two reasons. One, interviewing, so the two, let's talk about the two types of interviews, and we can go back and forth on this however you want to organize it. But when
Oh,
you're
it's not
interviewing,
organized, just to be
okay,
clear.
great.
Yeah, this is not organized.
Excellent. So interviewing donors is a huge source of fundraising stories because if you interview donors and ask them why they give to the charity that you're working for, they'll tell you odd, honest, beautiful, wonderful things about how the charity makes them feel, how they see the impact of their giving, and how they know they're making a difference. And then you use that content in ways that gets other people reading it to say, "Oh, I agree with Helen," or "I agree with Susan," and you build that connection between donors and other people like them. So the charity doesn't have to spend all its time yammering about how great you are. You have your donors doing that for you, saying, "I love this organization because of this. I've been giving since this time in my life when this happened, and it makes me feel so good to be part of this solution that we're working towards." And when you interview people who've been affected by the charity, they'll tell you the same thing about how their lives were changed by the work of this organization. That's incredibly powerful.
And it kind of does the writing for you, as you touched on there. Like, I mean, sitting in front of a blank piece of paper, we've talked about this a lot of time, but sitting in front of a blank piece of paper and trying to come up with the words to describe your work, that's tough. You know, it's tough to start and crack open your own brain and spill it out there. Sometimes it's a lot easier to get the words from someone else because they've lived it and they have a different perspective of it, and they're not wearing their fundraising or writing hat. They're just talking to you and sharing their own experience. So it's about making our job as fundraisers easier, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is easier, more rewarding, more successful, more of a community or a chorus of people, as opposed to just feeling like you're the only one who's single-handedly responsible for keeping the lights on and making sure that all the cats in your neighborhood get rescued. If you actually have other people helping you tell that story, and other people who are, see themselves in the story and are excited to be part of the story, then all those things happen. It's easier for you, it's more rewarding, and you raise more money.
So maybe part of the reason people struggle with us talking about this is almost the word interview. Yeah, because I mean, does interview make it sound a bit lofty that it's like an interrogation or reporting? Really, all you're doing is assisting people to tell their story because you know, like you said, if you ask the program staff to write it, or you like ask a beneficiary beneficiary to write it, they almost get like stage fright, don't
Yeah.
they? So you're kind of trying to guide them through it.
Well, you're absolutely right. And two things I want to say there. One is that when possible, I try to call them conversations and not interviews. So when I ask, charities to give me, someone who I can talk to for a conversation, I try to use the word conversation instead of use the word interview, because then it does make people think, oh, like it's a journalistic thing and I have to like be accurate and have all my facts lined up, and I want to know the mission statement before I enter it. So having a conversation is a much more open thing. And the other part of it is that a lot of people feel like, and I hear this all the time with donors and with beneficiaries, I don't think my story is all that interesting. So there's a real kind of humility around people thinking like, I don't have that much to say. And so one of the things I always say to that is that, by telling us your story, you're going to help us further this mission, and you'll help us, heal more sick children, or teach more kids to read, or save more sapsuckers. So don't think of this as you needing to be a brilliant genius. Just think of it as another way for you to help this organization that matters to you. And then you can actually see people relax, like, oh, okay, now I get that. I understand that this is like this is another way I'm helping, and that makes them feel good. So they feel like they're having a conversation, they feel like they're helping, which is two things that every person wants.
Like it because it is fun, right? I mean, people don't see the value of these sometimes, but it is a huge help. It is a huge help to fundraising. Do you ever turn around to someone at the end and be like, "Do you know what? You're right. No one will be interested in what you just said." Let's start from the beginning. So say you're an organization listening to this podcast or a fundraiser, and you want to get a piece of this, you want to start interviewing beneficiaries to start telling your stories. How do you get in front of them? You know, this is obviously a challenge, I suppose, because nonprofits are very protective of their beneficiaries sometimes, or the program staff are protective. Any tips on how we can actually get access to these people as fundraisers?
Well, so the cheeky kind of consultant answer to that is that once you start to have some stories in your pipeline, and the stories that are being shared in your newsletters and in your social media and in your on your website and in other places, you can put within that same article or context, if you'd ever like to share your story, we'd love to hear from you. Please call me with my name, not, you know, info at or whatever. And so once you've created an environment where people are used to seeing stories from you can always have that little end piece that invites stories. You can also, as a part of your website or as a part of, depending on the organization, but on your website, whether if you're an organization, you can have a space to say, do you have a story to share? Would you like to tell us your story? If you're a hospital foundation, then hospital and kind of healthcare organizations, at some point you have some kind of quote unquote intake form where you're keeping track of the patient or the person and how they're doing. So that can be a part of the exchange. You can ask them if they'd be willing to be contacted to give feedback or to share their story.
So
So those are some ways.
sorry, I didn't mean to
Go
speak
ahead.
over
No,
you.
that's right. Go ahead.
But ideally it's like part of the process in terms of if it's on forms or if it's on part of the program staff are involved. But like you said, sometimes you can kind of sidestep them because the beneficiaries are going to the website. I've found they're often on the mailing list. You know, we don't think about that sometimes, but often the beneficiaries are getting your emails as a fundraiser. So sometimes it's just putting it out into the world like that, and people come back to you.
Absolutely. And then in a similar vein, I think program staff often, when you're asking program staff for like, hey, we need a story for this upcoming project, what can you tell me? A lot of times they'll push back and say, well, tell me exactly what you're looking for. You know, do you want a story about a kid? Does it have to be a boy or a girl? Do you care what grade? You know, like what kind of background? And I always find that by talking to program staff, I just say, what's moved you? Like what's been happening around here lately that made you feel proud or that made you feel emotional or that made you feel connected to this work? Like it doesn't, you know, I'd rather take a great story and turn it into the right kind of fundraising offer by using the fundraising part of my brain as opposed to crafting the perfect donor profile and then having the program staff squirrel away and find this unicorn person and it takes them, you know, forever and is a difficult process. So program staff, when you actually talk to program staff about, you know, tell me something that has been important and meaningful recently that you think our donors would like to hear about, I'm always amazed at how much program staff have to say, whether they're environmental organizations, social justice organizations, health organizations. You know, the program staff are very in tune with what's going on and they can guide you in really great ways, I think, I find.
Of course, they know it. They know it. And if you have them on side, then they're going to be, you know, they're a great vessel for actually sharing this stuff with you or pointing you in the right direction. I worked with an organization and they did a thing at staff. Was it staff meetings or once a month they used to do it called Roses and Thorns? And the program staff, one at a time, would share their rose and their thorn, which was one great thing that had happened to them in work recently, and one terrible thing that had happened to them recently. And the stories that came out of that, just by sharing like something that they thought was great for them, you know, they were tear jerkers. They were really lovely things that, as a fundraiser, you could then be like, aha, if I can kind of try and build upon that and talk to them in a bit deeper, we have ourselves our next appeal.
I want to pull on that thread totally. So staff meetings and all those casual, you know, water cooler, coffee maker, teapot type of arrangements are great places
When
to
you said teapot, you kind of like dismissed me with your hand as if to say, you know, Irish people and you with your tea, you know, I know you have coffee machines and water coolers over there, but thank
That's
you
how I
for
was. That's what I was feeling. So thanks for noticing.
that.
But having those casual interactions with program staff that allow them to be part of this whole ecosystem. You know, I've in the last year I've actually had some of the most rewarding feedback for me was from a client of ours. They're a environmental organization, and I did a bunch of interviews with their field staff. So these are field staff in all parts of Canada who are doing very complex, sometimes really nerdy bird health research. One lady was sticking her hand down slimy holes to feel for the right kind of nests, whether the right kind of nests were in place. So I had these totally bizarre conversations with these fascinating people who spend all their time doing really bizarre and fascinating things. Mm-hmm. And both of them, both these two people I interviewed, phoned their executive director and said, I actually was really nervous about this conversation because I didn't know what I was, how I was going to help with the fundraising project. That's not what I do. I'm a wildlife biologist. But I really enjoyed that conversation and it made me feel really good about being able to contribute in a totally different way. Yeah. So it was a, it was great and a great insight for me to say, wow, it never occurred to me that, you know, effective conversations and storytelling in charities is also a team building exercise within the organization, because the program staff in Nova Scotia feel much more connected to the importance of fundraising and they're behind it and they want to do more and they're looking for more stories and they offer more weird insights down the road.
Which is really awesome. They begin to get it and become a bit more proactive with you and a bit more on your side. I remember a fundraising friend of mine, Denisa Casement, and she was saying in the organization she worked with, when she first started trying to gather these stories, there was a lot of resistance and people wouldn't even talk to her and were very protective of the beneficiaries. But when they started to read the stories she'd write out of it, when they started to see the newsletters, they started to come to her and they used to like kind of sidle up to her and be like, you know, hey, how come you haven't written about me yet? And people actually got it. You know, they could see that you weren't just kind of squeezing stuff out of them, but were presenting them in a really, really lovely manner and doing good fundraising, which people love good fundraising. People hate shitty fundraising. But if you do good fundraising and share stories in a respectful way, people love it.
And a lot of times, you know, depending on the organizations, especially organizations that are working in social justice or in social services, dealing with vulnerable populations, you know, whether it's homeless people or, you know, other disadvantaged communities, a lot of times there's social workers on that staff who are super protective of the beneficiaries and kind of like, we don't want to marginalize them further. We don't want to re-victimize them. We don't want to be manipulative and like use their stories in a way that kind of shrinks them down to the kind of, you know, terrible things that have happened to them. And I think exactly to that point, once you can talk to your social workers and your program staff about like, this is not the intention and we actually want to honor these stories in a way that makes the people in them feel great about contributing and also makes the donors who are contributing to the causes feel great, there does become this really beautiful kind of infinity circle of, you know, I can see that this is positive and healing for the beneficiaries, and it's also rewarding and successful for the organization. And then the circle does kind of feed itself once you get into the right groove.
I love that. I want to delve into the practical side a bit of it. But before that, just a quick question. You talked about like bird organization and animals organizations who are maybe listening to it. You know, their question is going to be, how do you interview a donkey?
Aren't you doing that right now?
Boom, boom. So what would you say to someone who's benefit, you know, who, you know, their beneficiaries are not people we can sit down. I mean, we'd all love to sit down and interview a donkey, but what, any tips there in terms of what we're doing? Is it simply that you're looking at the program staff or?
So the easy answer is, for the most part, yes, you are dealing with the program staff, but you're dealing with the program staff in a way that, you have to remember that in the case of donkeys, if someone is a donor giving to the Donkey Sanctuary, of which there is one right here in Ontario, the people who give to that are people who would love to spend all their time with donkeys. So being able to share the stories of the people who are there doing that, they're the donkey veterinarians, they're the donkey, you know, enrichment staff, they're the donkey keepers, and they can give you an insight into that part of the work that the readers at home would say, oh, I would give anything if this could be a bigger part of my life. But through this channel, I now feel like it is.
That's nice.
And that was a really thoughtful insight that Stephen Price, the president of Bird Studies Canada, gave to me. He said, we always need to remember that when we're writing to our members, they would love to be spending all day, every day in the field counting sapsuckers, but they're sitting behind their desk as an insurance broker. And our job is to make them part of the story, because that fuels them. Like, that makes them feel really good.
Yeah.
So it's a neat insight that really, if you just introduce the people around the animals or the people around the environment, you know, the biologists and the field workers and the volunteers and those people who are actually involved on the ground in that work, then they kind of curate the stories that they're seeing. You know, they're a witness to this work and they're a part of this work.
Yeah, I mean that's interesting what you're saying. I mean, you touched on talking to donors before, but yeah, talking to volunteers, talking to board members, talking to people who've adopted donkeys, talking to, we got to look further afield. Is that a pun? Kind of. We've got to look, all around the organization, I guess, and see people at every angle because they've all got a story. They've all got something that could be inspiring. They've all got lovely sound bites that we want to feed out to the public.
Well, I think we and I have talked about this lots of times that, the voices in your organization, there are many, many, many voices in your organization. And doing the work to figure out how you can be an effective curator of all those voices. How can you be the conductor of the orchestra, the curator for the gallery, who's showing the community and the donors and everyone around you this range of voices, then that's the job of a good fundraiser, and that's the job of a good fundraising letter, is to be that curator.
Well, I mean, there's the famous in our sector example that you wrote of Ruby the hummingbird, and I'll link to it in the podcast description. But essentially, you wrote from a bird, and obviously, you're not interviewing a bird. I mean, you're a bit of a bird expert, but I'm assuming that's built up from the interviews you're having with people around Ruby, around the bird.
Absolutely. And so for in that particular case, I needed to do some kind of research and analysis on what is this bird, what are the unique characteristics of its species, where does it migrate, what does it do, how does this happen? And then also the story of Ruby was actually the story of what in Ontario we call bird strikes, which is when birds, migrating birds, fly into buildings and die. And it's like millions of birds die this way every year. It's tragic. So the organization was doing important work on bird strikes, and they were going to that a number of things they were going to do to prevent bird strikes and, stop developers from building buildings that are inappropriate if they're on migration paths. So that was the story, but the right voice for the story was the bird. And so it took some convincing to let us write a letter from a bird, but it was a transformational part of their fundraising program and totally changed the way they talked to their members and the way their members heard from them, and continues to pay dividends for them all
That's
these years
cool.
later.
But yeah, we won't get into it too much, but I'll link to the Sophie article because there's a Sophie article that delves into it, and it's a really interesting story and kind of what happened afterwards. It's great. So let's talk practical. So people listening to this, they want to start interviews. What kind of questions, say we do get some time with a beneficiary, we get permission to phone them or permission to sit down with them, or we're writing a form for them. What kind of questions are you asking them?
Well, so, and I know that we have shared this in different sessions that we've done before, but really a good interview boils down to a couple of very simple questions. Tell me what your life was like before you connected with us. Like, what was your life like before you met us as an organization? What was your life like now? And that kind of gets to what was the problem and what was the solution. I always ask questions to get people to think about a particular moment or a particular person that helped them. So tell me about the night you were rushed to the hospital with your child. Tell me everything you remember about that. Like, paint a picture for me of everything you remember about that evening, what was happening before that, what you were wearing, where you were, what the weather was like, to get people really reimagining the whole experience. So I try to dive into as much detail as I can around those kinds of things. So the moment you connected with our charity or a person who really helped you, tell me about that nurse who stayed by your bedside. What was she like? What was it about her that really affected you and that made you feel good? That type of stuff. And then the other question I always ask is, what would you say to people who support our organization? Because beneficiaries will tell you the most beautiful things when you ask them that question. And it's not always content that you can use in your appeal, but it's always content that you can use in your thank you letter. And it's always content that you can use in other parts of the fundraising program to share the voices of people who've been helped by the charity, messaging back to donors who've made it all possible. So, I mean, a really good interview does boil down to those simple questions around a problem and a solution, a person who really helped you, and what you'd say to supporters of our cause. You can dive deep into a lot of those questions depending on where the conversation goes, and go down a bunch of different, take a bunch of different angles and a bunch of different approaches. But a great interview really does boil down to that simple of a conversation. An interview with beneficiaries, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's key that you're listening and kind of delving into any bits that you see you know, any kind of tangents that they're allowed to go down those tangents, because you don't know what kind of gold is going to come out of that.
Absolutely.
Do you find they need a lot of prodding? Are people kind of not cagey, but have difficulty finding the words?
Sometimes, yeah, for sure. And so one of the things that I often do is I often will ask people as a kind of a warm up, you know, tell me about your connection to this organization, which is kind of an easier way to say, what was your life like before you connected with us?
Yeah.
So you get a pretty good sense of someone's emotional range and emotional vulnerability in that early part of a conversation. I also, as I said earlier, always remind people that by telling their stories, they're helping the organization. That helps them be cagey, be less cagey. Some people ask in advance. Like sometimes I'll have an interview or conversation set up and they'll say, can you send me the questions in advance? Or the program staff will say, can you send the questions in advance? So I only do that if somebody asks, because then I feel like people have kind of prepared and they've kind of studied it a bit, and they're not quite as open and conversational and just kind of going with it. Mm-hmm. But obviously if it makes someone feel more comfortable to see the questions in advance, then I have no problem sharing that.
All right. So in terms of if we're sitting down with program staff, what kind of questions are you talking to program staff? Is it along the same lines?
It is along the same lines, but the difference with program staff is that I really try to get them to zero in on one story quite quickly. So if I'm sitting down with the program staff and we're talking about the summer camp program, then I do kind of say like, okay, tell me what's going on with the summer camp program. Like how many kids are we helping today? You know, what's going on right now? Like, are you making pinatas? Are you doing paper mache? Like what's happening right now? Mm-hmm. And that often gets somebody kind of like, oh, actually there is this funny little thing that just happened or this little anecdote. And it either turns into a little gold mine for you, or they just feel more comfortable and realize like, oh yeah, I'm just here to talk about my work. I'm not being interviewed. This is not a journalist who's going to grill me. I'm just chatting about what's happening here.
Any good pinata anecdotes?
Not off the top of my head, but I'm sure that came from somewhere. And then I think the other thing is to get the program staff to zero in on a person or stay with the camp analogy. You know, can you tell me about a camper a camper story that really moved you, like a camper story that really sticks out in your mind, that was really memorable, that you think really showed a lot about the program and a lot about the camp? You know, tell me what that's like, and go into as much detail as you can. Oh, tell me more about Brandon. What was his favorite thing to do when he was at camp?
Yeah.
You know, what was it like when he was dropped off and picked up? What did you understand about his life outside of camp? And then you can just get someone really picturing someone specific in their mind, a program staff, remembering someone specific, you'll get a lot more kind of rich detail from that.
Yeah, 99% of program staff are going to have a favorite service user, if you will, a favorite beneficiary that's stuck in their mind and reminded them why they do this, I imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's cool. Okay. And who else might you be interviewing? You're interviewing program staff. Do you ever sit down and talk to board members?
I do. I've talked to board members usually for one of two reasons, either because they're also a donor or because they can give a different insight because of their volunteer role with the organization. Mm-hmm. And those interviews that you can get are gold because board members, I mean, while they're also probably giving their financially, they're also giving their time and talent to this organization. So they'll have a lot to say about why it matters, what they hope for, you know, where they'd like to see the organization go, what their proudest accomplishments, like what have you been most proud of that you've seen happen around here in your tenure on the board? Mm-hmm. And so they can provide some of that kind of organizational achievements and vision without sounding like a douchebag CEO who's just bragging about his, you know, amazing accomplishments, right? It sounds much more community-based and it sounds much more collective when a board member is talking about the work of the organization more broadly.
Yeah.
And then donor interviews. I think donor interviews are among my favorite of all.
Really?
Donor interviews, and especially I have a real soft spot for legacy donor interviews. People who have given to organizations for such a long time and they love it that much to remember the organization in their will, they'll tell you beautiful things about why the organization matters and why the work they do makes this person feel so good. And it's just gold to use to then find other legacy donors and other donors of all kinds, monthly donors, mid-level donors, but I have a soft spot for legacy donors.
So talk me through that. So a donor notifies the fundraising department, or it comes up that they've decided to leave a gift in their will. And then the fundraising department decides, okay, hey, do you mind if we have a conversation with you about why you've made that decision? Because we think it will inspire others to give. And then they're having a conversation. How does that conversation go? So you're going to die and
No, actually, that would be a really bad idea. Don't take that advice. Because here's the thing, and this is such a cheeky consultant thing to say, but legacy gifts are actually not about death, they're about life. And they're about the person's life. And when a donor has taken the step to remember you in their will, they care about you so much that you're part of their life story. You're part of the story, you're part of what they want to be remembered for being on this planet for. I'm a mother and I'm a pet owner and I'm a fundraising consultant and I'm a passionate supporter of Amnesty International. That's how I want to be remembered. And so, as an organization, you have this beautiful privilege of helping this person tell part of the story of their life through you. And when you get a range, so we look for a number of different legacy stories when we're trying to gather stories for legacy work. We look for people who have passed away and you've done something amazing with their gift, and they have a living relative who will still talk about it, like a child who can talk about her father's gift in a will or her mother's gift in a will, and how it makes me feel so good to know that my mom will always be remembered because of the new nature reserve that's here or whatever. And then we look for stories of people who are still alive who've made the decision to leave an organization in their will, and then asking them about, tell me about, why did you first start giving to this organization, however many years ago it was? What was that like at the time? What do you remember most about your experience in those early years as a donor that made you such a passionate, committed, long-term, loyal donor? And then tell me about the decision to leave this organization in their will. Why was that? Why did you do that, and how'd that come about? And you can get at so much content there, because one of the things we know about legacy fundraising is people are afraid to talk to their kids. Like, they're worried about what are my kids going to say when I tell them that I've left this organization in my will. And 99.9% of the time, the kids are delighted and they say, "Oh wow, mom, I'm so glad you told me, and I'm really proud of you, and thanks for doing that." So then other readers are like, "Wow, I'd love to have that conversation with my children. That seems like a really thoughtful, emotional, beautiful conversation." So there's so much gold in good legacy fundraising interviews.
That's really powerful because you can address or preempt people's other potential donors' concerns by having those interviews with donors.
Yeah. And same thing with another concern about legacy donors, also true for monthly donors, is this going to affect, if I give, affect my current financial situation, right? So I can leave a more significant gift, or if I give monthly, I can make a more significant gift and it doesn't affect my day-to-day finances. So you ask the right questions to get the people to offer that information, so that you can then use that as a way, so that the donor's reading going, "Oh, I was actually thinking about that, and now the question has been answered," without again being the kind of faceless charity saying, "You can help us plan ahead and respond more quickly to urgent situations as a monthly donor." But what a monthly donor says, "I feel great because I'm able to give more and it doesn't affect my month-to-month finances." That's exactly what you want another donor to read and say, "Oh, good, I see myself in this. I feel like Carol. I get that."
It's like reading customer reviews for a restaurant as opposed to, seeing the restaurant say we're the number one fucking coffee chain in the world.
Exactly,
But
totally.
I love that idea of interviewing family of people who have already passed away and
Yeah.
seeing what their thoughts on that gift are. I'd say that those are pretty intense conversations.
They can be. They can be, I mean, a lot of whenever anyone is expressing themselves emotionally, there's a vulnerability on both sides. And so, as a storyteller and as the writer, I always go into it really honoring and kind of leaning into that vulnerability and showing my own emotional response and my emotional vulnerable place that I'm in too, and people really open up to you when they feel that they're talking to someone who's not just tapping down notes robotically and kind of transcribing the conversation, but is actually invested in it and curious and offering your own insights and showing empathy and, talking about how I know this must be hard for you to remember this, some of this stuff, and I'm really grateful to be talking to you. It makes people feel really good. I've had lots of people tell me that interviews, both on the beneficiary side and as donors, is healing for them. Like, this actually helped me. Thank you.
Wow.
Like, it helped me talk about this. It was nice to sit with my mom for an hour today and remember her for who she was, you know? Thanks for doing that. Yeah, it's amazing.
Do you ever consider interviewing dead people? Like, if you got Whoopi Goldberg and you know she was able to communicate with Patrick Swayze, would you be into that kind of interview?
That's a great new idea, and I would definitely encourage you to explore that, Simon.
Okay, a real question here. Are you recording these conversations, or how do you take notes? Because, like you said, you don't want to...
Yeah, I don't record the conversations. Sometimes I do. I prefer to just have my, if I'm interviewing them in person, yes, I use my voice memos on my iPhone and I just let it run. Mm-hmm. If I'm speaking to them, because we do a lot of work with organizations that are across Canada and around the world, a lot of the interviews that I do are on the phone. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I just make sure I'm in a really quiet room and I use a headset and I mute myself when they're talking and I just jot down tons and tons and tons of notes on my computer.
Oh yeah. And so that it's just audio. They can't see you kind of breaking. Okay.
Yeah. For the most part. And some people do. I know that Tom Ahern transcribes all of his interviews and then, you know, plays them back start to finish. I think finding your own comfort around, I've over the years, I've gotten really good at being able to stay present and connected and curious in a conversation, but also be jotting down the notes that I know are the real kind of gold that I've discovered. I also will, once every interview or conversation is over, I'll spend about another 10 or 15 minutes with my notes just saying, oh, that was an unfinished thought. I didn't get it down all the way, but I know that what she said next was awesome. So I really want to make sure that I'm reliving that properly now that it's fresh.
Well, and then it's simply a case of converting the, I mean, not simply, but actually kind of lifting the key phrases out of there and the key points and the key emotions and values that they've got across. And that becomes your communications.
Sure does. And when people have thoughtful, unguarded, emotional conversations with other people and they show themselves and they really show up and communicate what this organization means to them or how it makes them feel, what they say comes out in a conversational, beautiful way. It doesn't even need to be heavily edited at all. And one thing that an insight that I've discovered more recently that is interesting is that I did a whole series of interviews last year for a zoo. They were doing a major capital campaign. And I interviewed people from up and down the organization, donors, volunteers, zoo guides, teens, you know, long-serving staff, field staff, biologists, veterinarians. And I talked to this one guy who told me this beautiful story about how when his kids were little, he'd bring them to the zoo. And it was the first time he ever felt like they were really off leash, was the word he used. And that he watched them run through the zoo as fast as their little feet could carry them, following every curiosity and discovery with this like magic and wonder. And it was beautiful. And I basically transcribed it almost verbatim, sent it back. And he says that it doesn't sound like me. And I'm like, actually, it does, dude. Like, if you want to sound more polished or professional sometimes, then I guess that's your bag. But this is actually what you said.
Wow.
And it was conversational and thoughtful and lovely. And so we made an edit and watered it down a little bit. But
it ruined it.
He tried to ruin it. But, you know, we went back and forth a bit and I got the rest of the client involved to kind of talk to him about it. But people do, sometimes I do get that feedback. People read this and say, oh, this doesn't sound like me. This is too, I'm sharing too much. It's too open. And that's just a vulnerability thing, you know?
Wow.
So it happens.
I love that. That's amazing. All right. I'm going to, let's wrap it up. I'm going to kind of wrap it up now. It's obviously Valentine's Day. Well, we're pretending it's Valentine's Day. and so I'm sure you have plans. Did you get any nice presents from your husband this Valentine's Day?
Of course I did. He just blew my mind, as he always says.
Yeah, fantastic. Great.
And the kids made me beautiful cards. And how about you?
Wow. Just usually I got such wonderful stuff. And this thing is great. And yeah, it's been such a joyous Valentine's Day. Thanks a million. You know, you are an eternal friend of the podcast. We love you, especially on Valentine's Day. We love you. And so I hope we can get on to chat about it more. But thank you so much for being so open and honest and sharing that stuff. It's really, really useful. Where can people find you, Jen, if they want to get in touch with you or learn a bit more about what you're doing?
Well, people can find our Agents of Good website at agentsofgood.org. And you can find me on Twitter at Agent Jen Love. And you can find me cruising fun fundraising conferences in the next year.
Yeah, very good. And your agency, good website. You've got a good newsletter that you and the other friend of the grumpier friend of the podcast, John Lepp, contributes to. You guys send out some good stuff. And you'll be speaking at plenty of conferences this year, I'm sure, so people can see you. You're a fantastic speaker. Cool. Thanks so much, Jen. Take care, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Bye, Simon.
Bye.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello. This is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.